RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the day after Easter and the Monday edition of the Dark Delight podcast with
Frankie Cottontail Val.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah, I just came up with it 5 seconds ago.
You're so witty.
Well, you know what it is? I actually, I would prefer more than 5 seconds, but I always forget I started this little name tradition until right before we launch.
When you remember that you started it is when we'll stop doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise, it'll be contrived and fake and nobody out there wants that.
You're right. You're right. Well, happy Easter, everybody out there. And it's good to get back to work on a Monday.
It is Monday and it's a beautiful day outside, as contrary to the Friday show where I was underneath some tornadoes and dark and stormy storms.
Did anything ever touch down out there or just tornado warnings?
You know, it was crazy because we had a text message come across with like our exact coordinates saying that there were funnel clouds and spiraling things happening right down the block. And so my family went through their tornado exercise plan and everybody executed their duties as they were required to do under the plan. And we thankfully never needed the plan.
Do you have tornado insurance?
No, because it's not common here. There have been a few, but they've always been on the beach, believe it or not. But yeah, no, I have flood insurance.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, new week, new things to talk about. What are those things?
This morning began because I actually took off a little bit this weekend, which was so beautiful to spend some time with family. I started reading this morning volume two of the Mueller report. And I have a whole bunch of stuff fresh in my mind. And there's some breaking news coming out as we're recording right now that we will talk about. But I wanted to get into some of this supposed obstruction nonsense in the report. There's been some things out there, Frank, like already talked about. Have you heard any of those things?
I've been reading so much random stuff and listening to podcasts and everybody's YouTube updates and analysis, whether it be everybody from Black Conservative Patriot to you to, I bounce around all over the place. So there might be a good chance that whatever you are ready to jump on, I've touched on in some fashion, but I'm always willing to learn.
Okay, well, good. We'll get on with it then. So the footnotes in this thing are more telling than the thing itself, if that makes sense. Believe it or not, especially in volume two, if you look at the footnotes on these interviews or on the Mueller report, you'll see they each indicate the date of the 302 from the interview the special counsel had with the person. So, for example, it'll say Mary McCord or McCord 302, date 7/17/17. Flynn 302, 11/21/17. So you can tell when these folks were interviewed by the special counsel and what they said when. Now, I haven't gotten to do this yet, but my plan will be to go through here, take those dates, throw them out in a calendar with their names, and then take a look at press reporting around the time of these interviews to see what in the heck was going on in the mainstream media when these people were talking to the special counsel. Why? Because I want to see if there were leaks and I want to see what the public narrative was at the time and if some of these people were towing the line. And I want to see if there was some coordinated strategy, because I know from the verse volume that there were ridiculous leaks to the media from the special counsel.
Yeah, it must be really interesting to people in the media, especially if you think, well, this is great. This is great. The FBI or the special counsel, they're coming to us for this and that. But then to also see your own reporting show up as justification for spying or anything else like that. You think that is like an oh shit moment for some reporters, or do you think that was always part of the plan from the beginning? They knew what they were getting into, because I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of willing dupes out there, and then it seems like a lot of unwitting idiots that are just being taken advantage of all throughout this timeline.
You're right. There's both, and it's hard to figure out who's who. You mean at this point you have to believe that there's no way that these people don't know that they're being used. And let's actually, this is a good opportunity to kind of talk about open source intelligence and how it works and how like what I do works and why it works. Oh, the government itself has a massive division that handles open source intelligence. And there was an article that came out yesterday by the Washington Post that basically said we shouldn't be upset when China is using spies inside the United States. And the article itself wasn't. The headline was kind of misleading. The article itself basically asserted that human intelligence and signals intelligence is a very, very small part of intelligence gathering as a whole. And while I don't put any real weight on the Washington Post as an outlet and wonder what the motivation behind this was, it still begs the point that several times throughout my tenure doing this, I've laid out to people that open source intelligence is cited in FBI investigations, in you know, CIA investigations, in these investigations as solid investigative work that they use to base other things around. And again, the government has a whole department that does it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the reason why it's powerful, for the most part, isn't because there are anonymous sources that feed information to reporters who report it. It's because usually it can be backed up and it's very credible because it uses named sources and is actual factual information. We have gone far down the rabbit hole of that not being true anymore. For the most part. So when I'm doing my work, and I'm talking a lot, sorry, Frank.
No, I'm just keep going, please.
When I'm doing my work and I get like a, you know, sources say, anonymous sources within the administration say that three people close to the president with knowledge of how he thinks, you really just write that off initially as a rumor until you get more confirmation or people disprove it. But there are ways to kind of corroborate a news story that comes out that cites anonymous sources using the other facts inside the article and finding other sources where those facts are also used and then verifying those articles. Do you understand what I mean?
Absolutely.
So there's ways to get around the anonymous sources, and the fact that the Mueller report and other government documents are citing these loose, ridiculous news reports that the news reports themselves are just based on what the government fed them is a telling indication of how little they actually have. Does that all make sense?
Absolutely does.
So
I mean, you look at the what we've been forced to piece together, and with all of the evasive language that is pushed into these pieces of media that have been circulated for years now, all the evasive language and the twisting of words and whatever the hell it is, it's astonishing that we have still been able to actually construct timelines that are now being verified in the hereafter, because there's so much disinformation and misdirection in all these controlled fluff pieces that you think that, well, there's absolutely nothing here. But like I've said before, it's almost as if in the modern day, especially now that media is becoming decentralized and a lot more independent, you have to learn to speak and read and decipher and comprehend a second language.
Yeah.
Where you can actually be reading words on paper, but you have to look in between the spaces and behind the words meaning themselves, understand the kind of people who are writing it, who they're affiliated with, and what their overall agendas have been pointing toward, and to surmise from there or to extract whatever kind of lessons you got from there. Here we are. So that's why you're saying the most, when you say to me, I think some of the most important stuff are in the footnotes. I understand exactly what you mean, because everything else is fluff and there's just so much confusion out there. And that's a major tactic is confusion. So here we are. And I totally get what you're talking about.
Yeah. What you said is brilliant. Like, it's perfect. That's exactly right. Words don't mean what they actually mean anymore. And people need to like filter out what the real meaning of stuff is from what's underneath. It's really crazy. And that's what we do all day long. Or at least that's what I do all day long, is try and figure out what the hell things actually mean, because they never tell you what they mean. You have to do it on your own. And so inevitably, there'll be mistakes made. And I'm very open about that when there are mistakes made. But it's important that this exercise still continues, and that, you know, if something's not positive, you say, I'm just saying this is an interesting connection here. Maybe it needs more scrutiny. So one of the things that needs more scrutiny to me is what was going on inside of the media and in the world at the times that are listed inside of these footnotes when these folks were meeting with the special counsel and their office. For example, Chris Christie met with the special counsel in February of this year. That was 2 months ago. And I don't know what to believe in this thing, to be quite honest with you. And we'll start with the first point, if that's fair. The first thing that I realized when I was reading through this is that we did a lot of work on the John, the Dowd interview with Byron York, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that come from Don McGahn in this special counsel obstruction of justice probe is that the president said, oh, I'm effed now. I can't do my job. This is the most horrible thing that could ever happen. I heard when the special counsel gets appointed, the presidency's over. I don't believe that. I don't believe that that's true.
I was wondering where those quotes came from. Like, is that from an audio tape? Who was recording it? Or is this all just testimony? You know, where those quotes come from?
This comes from, hold on, I made a separate tweet. I'm going to find it. It's just the testimony of McGahn, as far as I know. Here we go. It's section 50, footnote 504. And of course, I didn't do it. There's a footnote that references it, and I'm going to find it for you right now. But basically, it seems as though it was just McGahn's notes and his testimony to the special counsel. Now, President Trump came out and said, don't believe these notes that may not have been there before and were just created for this very reason. And that makes sense to me, because Dowd had heard from someone how that worked out, that Sessions had no idea, that everybody sat there stunned, that Sessions immediately offered his resignation because, you know, he was so embarrassed that he didn't know about the special counsel. And Dowd's interview, for the most part, otherwise was spot on. So I don't understand where this came from. And I don't believe that it's true. And if that's the case and that's not true, and there is this investigation into what the special counsel was doing, I don't know how much of the rest of this that we can believe that is not directly attributed to like text messages or emails or something.
See, when I listened to that, when I read it, first of all, I made that a central focal point of my show on, I don't know when the hell it was. When did this come out? Thursday?
Yes, I believe.
I made
Friday.
It a focal.
No, Thursday. Yes.
Thursday. So Thursday night, I said, listen, there's one thing I want to pull everybody's attention to, and that was these quotes attributed to Trump about how he's screwed and this ruins presidencies and I can't believe it. And you were supposed to protect me, Jeff, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, taking that at face value, number one, you know what that means if it's real. You know what it means if it's real. You go through a grueling campaign process. You actually win the presidency. You defy all the odds. You destroy a political machine with bottomless amounts of money and contacts in the media and friends who are conducting polling for you, everything to create and project the idea that there is no way Trump can win in any fashion, and to come away with a monstrous win. And after all of that, be saddled with the special counsel in the opening months of your presidency. I know exactly what that frustration is stemmed from and what that worry is stemmed from if it actually happened. But then on the other hand, there is the whole other thing that you have to contend with, which in these 400 pages, there is no doubt in my mind that this was all, and we've talked about this before many times, there's no doubt in my mind that this was all crafted to not necessarily bring criminal charges, but to kick the ball down the the street, just keep kicking the can and create as much fodder for the media and as much firepower as possible. This is, entire thing was a powder keg. It's all vague nonsense. So I can believe it either way. If Trump actually really said that, I know where the frustration came from.
Yep.
If it actually never happened, then it just goes to show exactly what this Mueller report was always supposed to be.
No, yeah. That's true. You're right. And the thing is this, like all of this reverts back to notes and Jeff Sessions' testimony saying you were supposed to protect me to the special counsel. That makes perfect sense in, like, even if it was, if John Dowd's version of the story is true, that makes sense. Because this entire thing was nonsense. And one of the common threads throughout the whole obstruction thing is that this is bull. I didn't do any of this stuff. Why the hell is this happening? But there's a couple of interesting things in here. The obstruction portion of this tries to make it out like Trump is some idiot who has no idea what's going on and is really, like, stupid about how the law works and doesn't get... You're not supposed to talk to people about this, and it's not tactful to use these words. And it just paints him out to be this bumbling fool, of course. But there are little glimmers in here that make me believe that that's actually really not the case. One that I was just about to tweet before we started. And then don't let me forget to go back to the polling stuff, because you mentioned polling and it flagged me. One of the things in here that I just read right before we came on was that during the whole Don Jr. meeting thing, when they were kind of going back and forth on the team trying to figure out what they were going to do about it, Trump didn't want to know anything about the emails that Don Jr. had with anyone about it. He just didn't want to know. And I understand why. He wanted to be out of the loop so that he wouldn't have anything to do with what happened with his son. And it makes sense to me, which also, again, clarifies that he had no idea the meeting happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting is that there's a phone call that happens and Hope Hicks calls in to try and, you know, engineer how they're going to handle this. And they're on Air Force One. Hope Hicks isn't, but the president is. And they're on the phone with the attorney for the president, the private counsel for the president, and he tells her that they're in the midst of working with Circa on a different story that proves that, or attempts to prove, that the people connected to the meeting were sent in there to frame up Don Jr. and actually were connected to Fusion GPS, etc. Now, he doesn't say Fusion GPS, but the story I was able to find on Circa does say that it was a setup and basically goes through and explains how they tried to set up Don Jr. by using these people who were connected to the firm that did the opposition research on Trump. Why is that interesting to me? Because, well, who do we know wrote for Circa at the time?
Oh, darn. I forget.
It's the two people who have covered this story from the beginning, using what they say now were contacts from deep within the intelligence community that came to them to get the story out. John Solomon and Sarah Carter.
Okay, say, I was thinking about two other people. So I was going to get it either way.
That's fine. Ding, ding, ding. So it's John Solomon and Sarah Carter were with Circa at the time. I don't know if Solomon still was, but he was with them. And so the story comes out and it makes sense to me, like, okay, already back then they were trying to get the truth out about what's going on here. And already all the way back then, they knew what was happening. So that's like almost like an okay. So they actually knew that this was a setup. Now, while the Mueller report doesn't give any other indication that they knew it was a setup, that one little section there tells you what may have really been going on within the Trump administration that we're not privy to. Another interesting thing here is that Hope Hicks basically confirms that Priebus was a leaker. She says once she finds out that Reince Priebus knows about the emails that were in existence between Don Jr. and these folks about the meeting, she has no confidence anymore that they won't leak. So I'm like, okay, so now we know that for sure. Hope Hicks doesn't trust Reince Priebus.
Tracy, do you think that in 2021, if Donald Trump wins re-election and he's staring at no impediments in his way for a final term in which he doesn't have to worry about getting re-elected or anything like that, pulling any punches, What do you think he does as far as his staff? Do you think that we are going to look at a great All-American shakeup as far as the staff around him? Is he going to keep the same kind of characters around there to try to navigate the swamp, per se, by keeping those around him who have one foot in, one foot out? Or do we go finally All-American and get – just because you think – I think back to the Rince Priebus starts, the root of this first term, and all the people who are still around him that thankfully – are not there anymore. You think the second term looks any different?
I hope so. I still think that there is a necessity to have some of those swamp creatures around, sadly enough. But I mean, it depends on what happens in the next 2 years in terms of investigations and all of that stuff. Matt Gaetz actually came out over the weekend and said that the leak and payoff investigation is going to come out before the FISA investigation report comes out. And basically there were bribes going on between reporters and FBI people where the reporters would give them tickets and stuff to you know, whatever events in return for information. I mean, this is just sick. So that's been investigated, and Gaetz says that or Gaetz or however you say his name, I just whatever. He's going to come out with this report, Horowitz, before the FISA stuff drops. The only reason why I'm saying that is because we're getting a timeline now of how things are going to happen. And depending on how that goes, I think there will be more ability to not need to keep these folks around. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I just want to clean our government up, guys. Like, I just want there to be good, trustworthy people in government for once. Is that too much to ask?
Yes.
I guess so. I guess so.
That's why government has to be destroyed.
I just pictured, like, the Death Star.
Yeah, absolutely. Only instead of the Death Star blowing up the entire planet, we just need the Death Star to grow two arms that has a scalpel in each hand, and they can just start excising major parts of it.
They need to get rid of this grossness. Speaking of which, you know, Mitt Romney came out with his little, "I'm disgusted by this nonsense. I can't believe this. It's," you know, I mean, come on, dude. I shared a tweet which got a lot of traction. I was pretty surprised about it. My friend Gigi reminded me. Back in 2012, when they were changing the rules at the RNC so that Ron Paul's delegates didn't matter, they scripted a voice vote on the floor in order to get the rules change passed, which caused one of the delegations for the state of, well, the entire delegation for the state of Maine to walk out of the convention chanting, "As Maine goes, so does the nation." Who spearheaded that? Mitt freaking Romney and his establishment cronies. Remember who these people are. They show you who they are. This was happening back in 2012.
I just don't know what the hell's wrong with Utah.
Oh, God, I know.
What the hell's Utah thinking? I don't understand it. How this guy could even have a job again. It's just sick.
Yeah, and you know what the problem is with it? That statement wasn't... It was a broadcast, I think, if there were to be an impeachment vote, how he would vote.
Well, the fact that we're still talking about impeachment now is just goes to show what kind of mentally deranged challenged people. Oh, challenged, deranged, schizophrenic, split personality disorder, whatever the hell it is. It's this is just bad. And the other thing here, too, not bad in the way, oh, this is going to have or he's really in trouble now. It's just a lot more casual than that. They don't understand on the left that there is a shrieking minority of minions that are following them into the right into and through the gates of hell. They will do that. But they don't understand on a lot more casual basis that far more Americans have either tuned out completely or I don't know. They're just they've checked out.
Yeah.
They've tuned out completely or they're disgusted by how far this is going. Like, you see this kind of denial and this sticking to the story coming from second graders who want to deny that they spilled a chemical or something in the lab at school and they don't want to tell anybody it wasn't me, it was somebody else. No, I swear on my mother's grave and she's not even dead yet. You know, stuff like that. Where you can't let go. So many people have tuned out and others are just disgusted. You know,
not only. Yeah, I think that they have, but I think they've tuned out to the, I mean, I think that when, I'm just interested to see how the media covers the other side of the story, if they cover it at all. I mean, you know, the Greg Craig indictment got like no media coverage whatsoever, which is why it's up to all of you out there. If you find what we're talking about here of value to you in your knowledge about what's going on in the country, to share the hell out of broadcasts like this, like Dan Bongino's show, like other shows that are doing this work to try and tell the real story of what's happening here, because it's important. You know, we have to become the mainstream media and kind of relegate the other media to the dustbin of history where they belong, because they're not doing the work. They're propaganda.
Well, it also goes back to, especially with Greg Craig, they can tread water like this for years. If there's one indictment, there's one person that gets caught up in a scam every couple of months, they can tread water like this for years. They need to be buried under an avalanche.
You're right.
They have to be buried. I don't. The trickling thing, the Chinese water torture, is not going to work.
Well, I mean, just to give everybody a little bit of a sigh of relief, that Greg Craig indictment came out of the special counsel's office, who referred it to a different U.S. attorney. So it has nothing to do with any of the stuff that's happening right now. So I do think that they'll come down in rapid fashion. I don't think it will be a trickle.
Cool.
So back to the report. Oh, real quickly, before we get back into this, in part one or volume one, when we were talking about it on Friday, I don't think we talked about the polling being leaked to Kilimnik. Somebody pronounced it or showed me how to pronounce it correctly, and I'm probably still doing it wrong. The reason why Manafort leaked, he leaked their internal polling data. So the Trump campaign was doing its own polls internally, which completely discredited the mainstream media polls, and they knew it. So Manafort wanted to show that he was being successful on the Trump campaign and effective. And that's why he sent the internal polling over, because he was trying to gain favor for, you know, increased contracts after the Trump campaign was over. And he didn't want to, you know, be on the administration or the transition team. He wanted to go back to private life and sort of leverage the few months that he had on the Trump campaign to be able to gain himself more credibility with, you know, the outside sort of swamp that's connected to D.C. in the world, you know?
Mm, yeah.
So that's why those polls were shared. And I just wanted to get that out there. It's not illegal. There's nothing illegal about it. It doesn't matter. So there's that. Moving on.
Yes.
They talk in the obstruction portion about Felix Sater being the one, I'm sorry, about the Trump Tower thing and in Moscow, and Donald Trump saying in the press that he has no deals in Russia during the campaign, because they were starting to raise questions about it. And the Mueller team thinks that that's, you know, he was lying and trying to obstruct because he was saying they had no deals. And Trump said to Michael Cohen, this comes from Michael Cohen, by the way, Trump said to Michael Cohen, we don't have a deal in Russia. Why even mention it? Because all they were doing at the time was they had a signed letter of intent with Bayrock. That's it. There was nothing else. Now, Bayrock was Felix Sater. This is a completely Felix Sater engineered project. Felix Sater was a freaking intelligence asset. I don't care how many people want to tell anybody that he was just some Russian mobster. He was a very high level intelligence asset for the U.S. government, who worked with Loretta Lynch as a U.S. attorney and was then working with the FBI on other things. So he organized this whole thing. He wrote the overt email saying our buddy Putin will get Trump elected. Listen, there was a reason he was supposed to go up and sit in front of a committee after Michael Cohen last a couple weeks ago. Never showed up, never had that meeting. I wonder freaking why, after all the Democrats came out using quotes from media reports that he was a Russian mobster connected to Russia. I guess they didn't want the cross-examination of Felix Sater to be on the record on television.
So they actually got in the way of him coming in themselves?
I don't know why his appearance never happened. I can only suspect that the Republicans were wise to Felix Sater, and the cross or the questions by them would have really destroyed what the Democrats had done in the Cohen hearing with Sater. Do you understand what I mean by that?
So like,
yeah. So in the Cohen hearing, they spent all this time talking about Sater and how he was a criminal and a Russian mobster and blah, 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 reading all this stuff into the record. And then if they would have had him come in and testify, the Republicans would have said, didn't you work for the U.S. government to do da-da-da-da-da? And he would have had to answer. And that would have destroyed the narrative that the Democrats were trying to bring forward, that he was some hero or some criminal. So they didn't have him in.
Yep. Another person on the inside that's supposed to be a linchpin to go and bring down Trump just happens to have more connections to them than anything else.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, moving along.
You know, and the other thing about the whole Russia thing, about as far as their, you know, why report anything if there's no deal? That is common sense thinking for a time where there are, you know, reasonable people on all sides of a coin. And maybe if there is some kind of a concern and somebody wants to look into whether or not let's say that there was a real reason to look into whether or not Donald Trump's campaign had been infiltrated by Russians or was under the influence of another country or something like that. This would still be pretty common sense thinking. Well, why do you have to bring even that up? There's absolutely nothing there.
Right.
Because the other side would actually say, well, there was no deal there. This wouldn't fly anyway. That's not evidence that we're looking for. And it doesn't make any sense. But, maybe at that point, I guess Trump just still did not understand the depths to which these people were willing to go and what they were willing to burn down in order to be able to take him out and or paralyze him politically. I guess he just didn't understand the depths at that point, that everything was going to be turned into a smear. It did not matter what the hell it was.
That's a perfect analysis of it. Why would he care? I mean, why would it matter? Why would an international, like you're saying, like why would an international businessman who does business all over the world be worried about a letter of intent in Russia for a project in Russia that he may or may not end up doing?
Yeah, he didn't understand the depths of the shit he was in.
I mean, there was no way for him to know at that point in time. Again, that's a good point. These people, these peripheral people that were in touch with these guys. Now, while Cohen wasn't necessarily a peripheral person, he wasn't on the campaign. President Trump was campaigning 22 hours a day. He was leaving these things, business things, to be done by his subordinates and run by his subordinates. He doesn't even email. He had no idea that any of this was going on. He had no idea that Papadopoulos was meeting with people who were Western intelligence assets, kind of cloaked as Russians. He had no idea that this stuff was happening. He does now. He did for a long time after he got elected, I think. Another thing that's a contradiction, Frank, from the beginning of the report is that in the obstruction portion, which is volume two, it says that there was press reports that the Russian government told the press 2 days after President Trump won that they had contacts with Trump's, quote, immediate entourage during the campaign. But if you remember what we talked about in much detail on Friday, Jared Kushner and Hope Hicks had no idea who any of these people were from Russia. And Putin didn't talk to Trump for 5 days after he was elected. So is this the press manufacturing a lie, or is it Russia attempting to sow discord by saying that, understanding what was happening? It's a contradiction, though, nonetheless.
Yep.
It also goes,
you're talking about the manufacturing, whether it's a manufacturer or whether it's just influence. And in international spy craft, you have to imagine that there's going to be some. This has been very advantageous. All of this has been very advantageous. I mean, who's really helped out Russia more? Has it been the American press and the left and the people who are holding the strings for that? Or has it been Donald Trump? His administration has not done any favors for Russia or its government.
No, I mean, look at just what we're doing with natural gas, that oil that kills them.
No favors there on any level.
No.
But on the other hand, the press has been doing a great favor for Russia just by tearing apart our country. There are other little nuanced things here that nobody really brings up. We talk about the attempts to reverse the the decisions that we were making as Americans on Election Day in 2016. We talk about those attempts all the time and what was going on behind the scenes, what was happening afterwards, this entire investigation, the report itself, and all the different phases of this nonsense distraction. But you tend to forget that all of these people now who are saying, hey, we were just following the facts. No, you weren't. You were casting a shadow. This was the lens through which we watched every handshake between Donald Trump, our president, and any foreign leader every time he left the country to conduct business on behalf of our country. Yeah. He was analyzed from this ridiculous standpoint of this conspiracy they brought up. You want to talk about influencing a nation and its direction. They were trying to actually destroy the ability for the president to actually converse with other foreign leaders by turning everybody into a potential collaborator.
They should all be indicted on FARA violations.
Absolutely. Every time that he left the country to go to Helsinki or whatever the hell it was never, none of the questions were about anything except whether or not every handshake was a little bit of a wink and a nod to something else that was being done behind the scenes. It was pure fiction, all of it. And you're telling me that that is not damaging on a domestic or a foreign level? I just don't know who the hell is writing this shit.
They even wanted the private notes of the conversations between the president and any government. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, they were throwing like a little tantrum when they wouldn't release the transcripts of his calls.
Yes.
That's one of the things that's very, very apparent throughout this, is that Trump was so upset, not because necessarily he was being attacked, but because he couldn't successfully, or it made it a lot harder for him to do the business of the country.
Yeah, because how would we as Americans ever know if the president is on the up and up unless all of his confidential notes in his from his meetings are first looked at by Chris Cuomo and Brian Stelter? How would we ever know if the president's on the up and up if we don't have the proofreaders go in there?
Now, remember, it's illegal for you to possess and read these emails.
Yes. Yeah, Chris. Thanks. Thanks. But don't worry. We are specially trained with deciphering the alphabet. We went to school to put letters together to form words and then words to sentences. And then sentences to paragraphs. All of you lowly people who have to go out there and dig ditches every day need us.
We don't. They're horrible. More?
Of what?
Of this volume two. We've got a couple more points.
Oh, whatever you want to do.
All right.
I'm Chewbacca in this this tandem over here. You fly the ship.
Toot. Can you do the Chewbacca moan? Oh my gosh. Okay. You pass with flying colors, Frank.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So, Chewy, we have, there was a kid in my, I'm not going to go into that. Never mind. There was a guy I used to go to high school with that wanted everyone to call him Chewy. So we did.
Good for him. He got what he wanted.
He used to walk around making that noise. Dead serious.
See?
Anyway,
some people get what they want in life.
What did you just do?
I punched the microphone by accident.
Are you okay?
No, I'm fine. The microphone's okay, though.
The big furry hands of yours.
I know. I'm just so clumsy.
Okay. They state in here that they, quote, previously had an investigation open into Flynn, and that the two calls that he made to Kislyak became a, quote, key component of that investigation. So if they had a previous investigation open, which we know now was probably that stupid, ridiculous contact with the non-spy, that woman, that helper set him up on. You know who I'm talking about? If not, I'll explain.
You're talking about Papadopoulos still here?
Flynn.
And this was at the dinner thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? Just go ahead and refresh me and everybody else.
Okay. So there was a dinner that Flynn was invited to in Russia. Stefan Halper set it all up. There was a woman there who they basically set up this frame to say she was like a honeypot for Flynn and that they were having like inappropriate relations. And she was actually a Russian intelligence asset, which she vehemently denies being any of those things and says that it was all a setup. But this is a pretext that they use to investigate Flynn. And so McCord is basically saying here that they already had Mary McCord, who was once, I think she was the deputy, I'm going to screw it up, deputy assistant attorney general, I believe, at one point. She was also an attorney, a U.S. attorney. But Mary McCord is a key figure in all of this. And she was basically saying they had investigations into Flynn open. And then as soon as that call happened, as soon as that those calls to Kislyak happened, that became the key part of their investigation. Well, what the hell, if that was the key component, what loose nonsense did they start it on? That became the key? What, would they just have an investigation open as like a fallback so that they'd have something to go to afterwards? Like, you know what I mean?
This is how loose everything seems at this point. So it all seems very loose and I don't know.
It's crazy. And then you see that Mary McCord was interviewed by the special counsel in July of 2017. July. Think about the dates. This is when Yates was also interviewed in August. This is when they're talking about how they're going to cover their asses on all the unmaskings they did. In the report here, we learn that the president and his team asked for the unmasked conversations that happened between Flynn and Kislyak and received them.
Oh, they were given it. They were given the conversations. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, everyone else in the world had them at that point anyway. All the reporters had them. Mm. They were, you know, there were so many unmaskings done. And what else do I have here? The Priebus leak. That's really it right now. That's it for that right now.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot going on over the weekend with the holidays. And I remember I skimmed through some of the headlines last night just to see if there was anything I can latch on to start writing tonight's show. And yeah,
I've got stuff. There's more stuff.
Whatever you got, let's go for it.
We've got those hairy hands of yours. We've got
that was the pop screen. I hold it like a magic wand.
Why do you need it?
Because if I get rid of this, it can. You hear that?
Oh, are you that close to the microphone? Are you this close?
Well, no. I keep the screen between me so that you can get a little bit more of a solid signal.
I don't use that. Maybe I should.
Oh, it's very good. It's very good stuff. Only thing is I don't have anything good that I can clamp it to, so I hold it like a magic wand.
I can just picture you with it's your monocle.
Yeah, it's my mouth monocle.
Yes. Nick Short came out with the tweet today. Today's April 22nd. There's an article in The Hill written by, come on, who's it written by? Guess.
John Solomon?
Yes. Congratulations.
One of the only people that are I read from that rag. I think like David Webb does stuff for The Hill every once in a while. The Hill has some people that they publish that are worthwhile, but I mean they're just as bad as most.
They are. They are, and they make John Solomon, who runs runs one of their divisions over there. They make him write all his pieces as opinion contributions. But basically what the report says, which I'll put in the show notes, Nick Short poses a question. Did U.S. intel get some Russia assessments wrong? Former CIA Moscow station chief says Trump camp contacts weren't collusion, but rather part of a discoverable influence operation, i.e. a setup. Indeed, anyone seen Renat Akhmetshin or Natalia Veselnitskaya lately?
Yeah, where's her girl been?
Under indictment, I believe. She's never coming back.
Interesting. And what does that indictment really serve at this point? Is it more like a, hey, stay the hell away? Because why would she?
Yeah.
I'm going to come answer for my crimes. No, I'm going to the U.S. to answer for my crimes. Now, they got everything they needed out of her. She was in all the right places at all the right times. And now it's a buffer. Stay the hell away, Natalia.
Stay away is right. Because we don't want her, you know, leaking any information or talking to anybody. She's taken the heat for a lot of things.
And so have two dozen nameless, faceless Russians that we're never going to hear about again, that were thrown in our face like cordwood, stacked like cordwood last February 2018. You know, with those two dozen indictments on Valentine's Day week. The same week as the Parkland shooting, we were given two dozen just Russians. That's what we were given.
It should have been like the 12 days of Christmas.
Oh yeah, when that came out, when Rod Rosenstein came out and said we've got 24 this people, that's what they did. And it, even though the conclusion and the footnote that he delivered on television was that there were no Americans involved, nobody that was wittingly or unwittingly involved or a part of this plot, which of course includes the president, it just didn't matter. But back in, when he brought those 24 indictments out that were produced by the special counsel, I said, well, you know what this is, everybody? This is the validation for why the special counsel was formed. Mm-hmm. They didn't catch Trump, but thank God they did it. Thank God they followed all those facts, because look at these Russians who were out there tweeting. They were tweeting. And they may have managed to swing the Electoral College vote by 74 points. Nope. And that's another thing that they did. They did not change one vote. But thank God we had the special counsel, because we wouldn't want Russians tweeting.
Tweets are dangerous, Frank.
Very dangerous stuff.
Hey, as an aside, did you see the story that came out over this weekend about the response to the FOIA request that was made for information in conversations between Seth Rich and Julian Assange?
32 pages.
32 pages that are not releasable.
Not releasable. And of course, all of the FOIA requests on Seth Rich's murder itself
aren't releasable.
Unreleasable too. National security.
You know when they don't release things also in FOIA?
Why?
And this is one of the reasons why I follow Judicial Watch outside of what they actually release, which is it's just a benefit to everybody what they do. Because when they don't get things, it indicates to me that they're being used in an ongoing investigation.
Yeah. But either way, it all points back to the same thing, that there's more here than meets the eye. Like it, whether or not there is something about there's a cover up or it's being used in an ongoing investigation. Why the hell is a random yet tragic botched robbery that ended up with the death of Seth Rich a national security issue?
It's there's no because, Frank, take off your tinfoil hat. OK, take off your tinfoil hat. Stop being such a conspiracy theorist.
Doesn't it say never at one point has it ever taken away from the tragic element of that death? But why? Where does the national security implication come from a random botched robbery?
A random botched robbery of a random DNC staffer who had absolutely nothing to do with anything that happened in the 2016 election season. That is a big conspiracy. And it's irresponsible for anyone to make any other assertion.
Well, even just his role has been diminished. They call him a DNC staffer. They don't talk about how he was actually involved. What was it, new voter registration and all mm-hmm. that stuff? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's some pretty serious stuff.
They don't talk about how Donna Brazile dedicated her book to him, or how she hid in her office with the blinds closed after he was killed. That's just left out of every conversation.
So
there were 32 pages that they couldn't release. If they came back and said we have found no responsive documents, then that would have been a different story.
Well, let me ask you this. If there, is this going to any way tie in? I've heard a few people point out regarding the Mueller report and the summary, and especially the parts through which the parts where there is corroboration between Barr and Mueller and everybody else, which is Russia hacked the DNC.
There's no corroboration between Barr and Mueller.
See, that's the thing. It seems they're parroting. I mean, he parroted what was stated in that Mueller, the actual report. But now, as quite a few people have drawn attention to, they use the word appear. You've
several
seen that?
Times. Yes, I made that the point to say that as well. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That it appears Russia had hacked the DNC. There is actually not, from a linguistic standpoint, there is nothing set in stone about that statement that Russia was the culprit behind the leaking of the acquiring and subsequent leaking of the information from the DNC. So that was. That my attention was drawn to that recently. I thought that was very interesting right there, too, because I was always wondering if we are not going to concede, or if we are going to concede that point, then how the hell could we ever possibly circle back around in a meaningful way to correct the record and actually go back to the beginning and ask, how did this happen and who was involved? But it seems like the window is at least cracked open.
Yeah, and I did it. You know, I it is cracked open. As a matter of fact, I retweeted something yesterday, I believe, where it's they basically, Binny and them, walk you through the process that they use to prove the memory stick and the time and date that this information was put on the memory stick. And basically, I will find the tweet and put it in the description box below. It explains how you, as a normal everyday citizen, can take the steps with any email listed, any attachment, and go through the steps to prove that this was transferred from a FAT file system. Do you guys know? A lot of people don't know, like, the difference between FAT and TFS, all the different file systems that Windows uses, but USB drives are formatted in this file system, a FAT file system, whereas the operating system for Windows on a desktop is not. So they're able to prove by the timestamps on the files and the metadata, all of them ending in even numbers, that the FAT file system was used, and the only place that that's found is on a thumb drive. And it instructs you how to go through yourself and test any email you want to test to make that known.
I think the other thing that Bill Binney had popped up with the testing from that group of retired intelligence workers and whatnot that wanted to actually take, because there was a lot of people, apparently, as what's being reported, at least, that were skeptical as to whether or not there really was this issue. Like, there are people who thought it was possible to be able to hack this from across an ocean or from any long distance wirelessly or anything else, and have the data rates be comparable to what they have found with all this material. And I think that what they're saying is that it's not consistent. It's only consistent with the thumb drive, because the rates that these were being transferred was probably about 25% of what would be necessary. 25%. Yeah. So they're off the mark by 75%.
Yeah, and somebody, I'll put this thread, I have to remember this. Somebody did a thread about this, who is an IT professional and had a good amount to say, and said, like, you know, just reading through the Mueller report, people without an IT background wouldn't really understand why it's so ridiculous. But it's ridiculous the way they did it, the way it was handled, the way they talk about the information, the fact that they call it a hack when they say inside the report that it was phishing emails that allowed them to get in, that it wasn't a hack. If they're going through a phishing email, basically redirects you to a fake website that looks like legitimate, like a bank website or Gmail or whatever, and it looks like it's Gmail, but it's really not. And then they ask you to log in, and when you go to log in and you put in your password, then they have your credentials, and they literally just use them to log into your account. And the person who did this thread makes a point to say, why were these people using Google email addresses and Yahoo email addresses to do this kind of work? You know, if you're going to hack into a network and gain access to an exchange server or an email server of some sort, and then it's a lot harder to do something like that than it is to actually have to, you know, just get people to give up their information willingly. And there's a lot more on this, too, that I think is going to be coming out in the coming days, because people are pissed off about it at this point. And I think we need to go back and look at the Rohrabacher time in history. The meeting across the sea.
Well, I'm praying. I'm hoping and praying.
It cannot be that this gets brushed under the rug. And, you know, I was talking to some of the, like, I was on a thread with a bunch of the Assange activists the other day. And again, I talked about on the show how they're like a little bit on edge. And I understand, like, if you've gone all in for Assange and you're like one of the champions of his freedom, and then you see the United States has arrested him or indicted him and he's going to be brought over here, you're obviously going to be skeptical about the end result. And I basically said, like, until we get more and we know what the hell is going on, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And so to, you know, immediately go and start crucifying an administration who has shown in the past that they support WikiLeaks and their right to publish. In several lawsuits, the Trump campaign lawyers have argued that WikiLeaks has a right to publish under the First Amendment. Looking at this weak indictment, and even people in the mainstream media saying how weak of an indictment it is and how it's just an excuse to get him here. Well, it could be an excuse to get him here because they want to slap more charges on him and torture him and do whatever else people say they want to do to him. Or it could be an excuse to get him here so that he could blow this whole damn thing out of the water. We don't know which it is yet. I tend to lean towards B.
I'm hoping for B.
Choice B.
That's it. Well, I guess we have a nice long week ahead of us, and let's hope for the best. But then again, we'll be doing this again on Wednesday morning.
Well, Wednesday morning it is, and I'm excited about it. I know there'll be a lot of news this week. It always is very busy. I will be very busy, with my stuff. Do you have any good guests this week before we go?
I have Chris Ann Hall. She's coming on, I believe, tomorrow. Chris Ann Hall is a constitutional attorney and a history teacher. She travels around the country, teaches the history behind our Constitution. She goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. So she's fantastic. She comes on once a month to give us history lessons, and I ask questions about things that are relevant today and the constitutional solution to everything.
She's great.
She's fantastic. Really is. And then on Wednesday night, I've got a man named Forrest Moretti coming on, and he's about to release a book that he published that concentrates on vaccines and the potential link to autism and all that stuff.
Oh,
so
wow.
I got a vaccine night coming up soon, and there's more people on the. I think Dr. Dave Janda's coming on the show next Tuesday, and I got more people. I am doing a 5G night soon with Jim Lee. Jim Lee is a great influence and source of information on everything that is controlled weather manipulation and he's fantastic.
You got a lot of good guests coming up. And speaking of which, we have a couple minutes, 1 minute to be exact. But last week on Friday, I believe it was actually, you did a stellar interview with that guy. I can't pronounce his last name.
Ben Zemkis.
Yes. He said some crazy stuff in his interview with you. This is the guy, Zemkis, who was at the party back in what year was it? 2007. 2007, the Nixium mixer that he was at, where all of these like high profile people were there. And a friend of his girlfriend's was invited to the party. She was going to what college in Connecticut?
I forget. He lays it all out there with his initial video that he put out in April of last year. But I just want, because that is all public and all of his retelling and his recalling of all that stuff, because he didn't really put two and two together until years later, about 11 years later, when he was pretty much triggered by a episode of Smallville.
Yeah, because of Allison Mack. What's interesting to me, when did the Nixium case get announced?
We started learning about this in I don't know. The case itself, I forget.
Was
I
think it before or after he came out?
It was in the middle of it all.
Okay.
Because I remember covering stories about Keith Raniere in 2016.
Hmm.
2017, and it was just an obscure story that crossed my path about there being a sex cult in upstate New York. And I said, oh, figures, New York, upstate, you know, nobody has anything to do up there. And and then, of course, all the gaps started filling in, and it became a lot more of a bigger story in 2018. That's when Eric Schneiderman.
Yep.
We learned that he had put the kibosh on the state investigation of Nixium. And then, of course, by August of 2018 is when he stepped down, and his girlfriend not only spoke about his abuse, but she also came out and was saying, don't expect to have much help from him on the Nixium case because he's very much like Keith Raniere.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And that was after that. All that's the one thing I got to give Ben is that whole thing with Schneiderman. That was after Ben's retelling saying, hey, Schneiderman was at this party and he was still a state senator.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that. OK, so let's just, I like to put this disclaimer out there. this is a gentleman who is on Frank's show. Frank was asking him questions. He has taken a lie detector test to prove that he's being truthful about what he's saying. Not that the stuff is true, that he's being truthful. That's a very big distinction. So we can't vouch for any of this, or I'm speaking for me right now. I can't vouch for any of this stuff. I don't know the dude. I've never talked to him. I just know what I saw. He said that Dr. Jerome Corsi was at this party.
Yeah, but you see, here's the thing. The initial telling of his story is really what caught my eye. It's 36 minutes. He's very, I mean, his body language seems truthful. I not only did he take the polygraph test, but there was also that Bombard's body language woman. She did in a complete analysis of him, too, and gave him the green light.
Yeah.
And I trust her a lot. And I have other friends. I said, listen, you really got to check this out. Oops. He's telling the truth, whether or not the passage of time has made any of this, you know,
foggy
or whatever the hell it is. There's still stuff going on here. It was a recruitment party. The girls that he went there with, they were pulled off into another room, shown what was believed to be snuff videos. I don't know. The thing that has gotten me a little weird is that since the initial telling of that story, there have been several addendums and amendments to the story that just keep adding more and more A-list names. And I just don't know if – I don't know. I don't know if just, you know, I just don't know.
There's no way to prove that he was there. There's no way to prove who was there. There's no way – like, you know, I don't know what's happening at this point. Like –
I would just watch the first. I would watch the first video and think for yourself. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Everything after that, I don't know how I feel about it, just because it could just be, you know, that one thing that happened. He's almost like a Forrest Gump kind of character, where an unassuming guy just found himself in an extraordinary situation and didn't know how to interpret it. And then maybe from there, you just got an opportunity to keep talking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how further versions.
It could be, Frank, that he needs to keep eyes on him, and he's trying to do that in any way he can.
Could be.
But we don't know. Anyway, I do you have that?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but I was just going to say the origin of that story is really, really fascinating.
Yeah, the first one.
So.
Do you have that cut out as its own thing?
I don't. But if you go and you watch the Friday night episode, it's called A Night with Nexium, featuring Ben Zemkis. He comes on at the 7:30 mark. So that's 30 minutes into the show, because I do a 15 minute pre-show and then a little bit of a 15 minute opening where I did a little bit more on Notre Dame and all that stuff. But by 7:30, he's on.
OK, I'm going to put the link in the show notes for people so they can watch it.
All right.
Really good interview. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks for going through that with me.
No problem.
Hey, you've been listening to the Dark Delight Podcast with...
Was it Frankie Cottontail Val?
Yeah.
That's me. There I am.
And Beans, you guys can hear us on a Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll see you Wednesday.
Later.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles and DJ Eakin, news and political pundits like Law and Crime Network's Vincent Hill, and independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.